that you may have life in my name. This is, I think, what Jesus' whole ministry boils down to, having life, presenting life, being a part of it, participating in its very fullest. That morning when Jesus was with the disciples, he had come from 3 days in a tomb. They thought the world had completely ended. They must have been terrified. They must have doubted every bit of what they were seeing and experiencing. And yet Jesus appears among them and hands them peace. And so it was. That peace enabled them to believe so that they could see him in all of his glory and believe that new life was being offered. How great it would have been if all of us could have been in that room as well. All of our doubts dispelled. But is living without doubt really the point of this story? Is it necessary to have no doubts in order to believe? Thomas wasn't there that first day that Jesus appeared. And his doubt has become legendary. Every year we have this story about doubting Thomas after Easter, right? And yet, Jesus comes to Thomas as well, even in the midst of his doubts, and offers him that very same peace that he offered the disciples the week before. He was not punished for his doubt. In fact, he was rewarded, given special treatment to be able to see the hands and put his hand in his side so that he could believe. The point of the peace that Jesus brings to us is to lead us to faith so that we might have life. That is what Jesus gives us and gives us as well as Thomas and to the disciples so that we can live in the midst of our fears and our doubts and know that God is with us. To know that even in our doubts, we can question how things work, where God is, and how God lives among us, and still know that it's God's gift to us that we believe, that we are loved, that we are accepted, and that we are invited to participate most fully in the life that we've been given. There are many questions and doubts out there in the world. And there are many answers in the world, too. But all of us are in this mutual conversation with one another, questioning, doubting, exploring, discovering, so that we can learn from one another, grow with one another. I have been in many conversations throughout my ministry, both online and in person with folks. And some of these questions, in fact, all of these questions, are big God questions. They're questions about why we exist. What should we be doing with our lives? These are big, terrifying questions. And as you can imagine, these kinds of questions are very seldom peaceful, right? They shake your whole world and they get people setting at odds with one another. So oftentimes you have conversations of comfort and acceptance, and then other times you have conversations of challenge and struggle. And you wonder who's right and who's wrong, when really it's the conversation itself, not who's right and who's wrong, that brings us together in this peace that Jesus is offering. Jesus doesn't give us peace so that one person is seen to be right while the other one is wrong, but rather in our mutual living together with one another, we can share that peace and even have life in the midst of our disagreements. Doubt, Jesus says, has a place within your life. It's the very process of asking questions and struggling with the answers and learning to live with one another and grow with one another, listen to one another, that brings us most fully into the life that we've been given. So many times we worry about being wrong, about punishment and judgment and consequences, that we never really take the full exuberance of what it means to risk that in order to find out something new. And we end up settling for a much smaller frame of life and a much smaller existence than God had intended for any of us. Think to the questions and the conversations that you've had with people. Which kind of conversation lasts the longest? A conversation where you're most worried about being wrong, school conversations necessarily with your teacher, for instance, if they ask you a question and you're so worried about getting it wrong, you just say, I don't know, right? Or those kinds of questions where you're in conversation with people that you trust and they ask big questions and invite your response and your possibilities and your wonderings in life so that you can discover something altogether new and think completely outside of where you've ever been before. Those conversations take time. They don't shut you down, they open you up to be fully present with the person with whom you're engaging. Those conversations are mutual conversations that bring us into fully living. There was a pastor I knew out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, who led a large Christian community there. His name is Carlton Pearson. And he once said to me, I am having to admit that we probably have it at least 50% wrong. Right? How many of you would say that you probably have more than that? Right? I would say probably 99.999% of what I think I know about God and life is probably wrong. What happens if that's true? What happens if even in the 50% that we think we have right, we shut down any more questions and don't even try to figure out those other 50%. Does that make it any less a child of God in God's eyes? Are we seen any less? Would we not try to be most fully who God intended us to be by asking questions and experimenting? Facing our doubts and using them as a window of opportunity to learn and to grow. It doesn't stop us from asking questions. Even if we fully believe that God exists, that God communicates with us, that God is present with us, that God loves us, which I'm hoping we all feel, what do we do now? What are the implications of this faith that we have? It doesn't stop us from asking questions. It opens us up to ask even more questions. And in digging deeper into that whole process of struggle and question and doubt and fears and all those things that are wrapped up in who we are, we begin a process of faith. The process itself is a form of faith. It is the peace that Jesus gives us. We are loved and therefore freed to ask questions, to discover, to explore. That is the Easter faith. That is how we participate with life in the midst of the promise of Easter. I remember when I first went to seminary, or when I first got out of seminary and started serving in parishes, people would say to me, I've often thought about being a pastor, but I just don't think my faith is strong enough to go to seminary and be a pastor. And I just have to burst out laughing, because it was not my strength of faith that took me to seminary. It was my disbelief that took me to seminary. It was in not believing. It was my doubts and my fears that took me there to have conversations with people who shared those same doubts and fears. It's by asking those big God questions that we realize we're not alone in our fears and our doubts. But that not only are we with other people who share them, but God is with us in them. God and Jesus did not abandon Thomas for his doubts, but rather loved him in the midst of his doubts. It's that love and that peace that allows us to have faith. The process itself is the faith. But seminary is not the only place that you question, that you ask big God questions. We ask them at the public libraries. We ask them in the grocery line at Hy-Vee. We ask them at our legislatures and in deciding things about how we move forward together as a community. We are not the ones with the corner of the market on questioning how God works in the world. Everyone has those questions, and they're standing with us in the grocery line. How does the faith that we carry allow us to enter conversations with those people? Even if they're not here with us on Sunday morning in church, but we see them in the libraries, in the legislatures, in the schools, in our grocery line. How do we begin our conversations? And what happens when in those conversations, the certainties that you're most certain about are exactly those things that I have doubts about, or vice versa? How do we start a conversation when we're worried about whether or not we're right or wrong? How does being afraid of being wrong get in the way of those conversations? No matter where you are, those questions exist. And our whole normative structure of life, our whole scientific methodology, way of being in the world, encourages us to ask questions, to struggle, to experiment. Whenever you do an experiment, right, you have to test your theory to see if it's right. And most often, you're wrong. But this peace that God gives us allows us to be wrong and still try again. To know that we are loved even when we are wrong frees us up to question things and to discover things. God gives us the resources in all of our sciences, in nature, in conversation, in human dynamic and interaction, in order to expand what we think we know and to question everything. So, how does this peace that Jesus gives us today affect our conversations? How about if when you begin to speak with somebody else, you recognize them as receiving the same peace that you received today? And that you don't have to convince them that you're right or you're wrong. How freeing is that conversation? How open is that to be able to allow you to listen to the other person? They share the same love of God that you do. So listening to them is as important as them listening to you. When we greet each other in God's peace, we open ourselves to that kind of listening, to that kind of growing and learning from one another. The aim of doubt is to bring us to faith. The whole world is in front of us, is waiting for us. And God makes it possible to participate in that world most fully with God and with one another. In the midst of our doubts, in the midst of our fears, bringing them together with each other so that we can live, even in our disagreements, together in God's peace, fully seeing the whole world in its complete ambiguity. No right answers, no wrong answers, just the unfolding of creation, ever expanding. How do you choose to live in that? How do you make those decisions? How do you discern who you are in God's world? You do it through conversation, through love, through prayer, through opening yourself up to whatever life gives you to experience and learning from it. This is Easter living. This is the promise that God gives us. This is the peace that is offered to the disciples those days in the upper room, even to Thomas. So openly receive God's peace and go out that you might have life. Amen.